The data for this presentation was done by Tracy Jewell, who's our MCH epidemiologist at the State Department for Health in Kentucky. And I'd also like to acknowledge the Healthy Babies Are Worth the Wait team, most of whom are sitting in the back. There's Carla Damus and Bonnie Petrauskas and Mara Burney, and Jack Morris is on the team, too. He's over here. They're the people that encouraged me to take this information further than what we were using it just in Kentucky. What I'm going to try to do in 15 minutes is a brief overview of how we looked at our data on preterm birth in Kentucky, why we think it's a public health issue, and some of the programs that we're using to try to address it. I think I don't have to tell this audience prematurity is important because it's the number one killer of newborn infants, and many of the children who survive prematurity have lifelong disability. Preterm birth is any birth less than 37 weeks, and we used to focus on these very preterm babies less than 32 weeks, the very small preemies, but now we know that there are also some morbidities for the late preterm, which is 34 to 36 weeks. This is the problem we were faced with in Kentucky. As you know, the national rate of preterm birth is rising, and that's the dark blue bars there. But you can see that Kentucky, who used to be fairly close to the national average in preterm birth, has now risen to significantly higher. So even though we're all worried about this rate nationally, Kentucky's rate has risen twice as fast. So one of the things we did is we looked at all our neighboring states. And again, we have a comparison back here from 1993 where you can see that we were pretty much in balance with the others. This is West Virginia, Virginia, and Tennessee. Tennessee's in orange. And you can see that as time has gone by over the last decade, Kentucky has climbed really fast, and we're now higher than everybody except our neighbors in Tennessee, and we're neck and neck with them. And so we looked at our northern swing of states as well. And again, U.S. is in the red. Kentucky is the dark blue here. And this is Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. And you can see that used to be fairly even, and now Kentucky sticks out like a sore thumb, and we are higher than all of our surrounding states with preterm birth rates. So we mapped this by our area development districts, which are our regions, and you can see that it's a problem all across the state. Northern Kentucky is the only place where we have a reasonable rate, and we don't know if that's the influence of Cincinnati or socioeconomics or what that influence is. So we looked at some selected risk categories for preterm birth. Actually, what we did, you know, when you put out a bad number, people try to explain it away. And so we looked at the things that people tried to use to explain away these numbers. We did do an analysis of our risk factors for preterm birth, and to no one's surprise, the most likely factor for preterm birth is a previous preterm birth. Also, in our vital statistics data, diabetes and smoking were, of course, significant. Interestingly enough, overweight and obese were not significant in preterm birth. This is preterm birth by my maternal age, and again, same as the national pattern, we have more preterm births in our teen population and in our older moms. So everybody said, well, maybe that's where our preterm birth rate is rising. You know those teenagers. Well, this is our preterm birth rate, our birth rate to teens, and you can see in Kentucky our teen birth rate is actually decreasing, and the prematurity in those births has not risen significantly. So we don't think it's from our teen moms, so we looked at our older moms. And sure enough, in our older moms, we do have a slight increase in our preterm births and an overall increase in births in older moms. So everybody says it's all that infertility stuff, you know, that these older moms are getting into. So we looked, and we now, you know, there's a checkbox on the birth certificate now where you say if this birth is a result of infertility treatment. And we switched to that new birth certificate in 2004. So we looked at our data both from 2004 and 2005. Less than 1% of our births in Kentucky are from infertility treatments. And that's also true and consistent with the national data. But we took those and we split them up. And how many of those are preterm? Less than half of that 1% are preterm births. And then we looked at the ages of the births from infertility treatments. And you can see in these older moms, there are really very few births from infertility treatments. So clearly that was not a significant influence in our rising rate of preterm birth. The other thing everybody says, it's multiples. Again, all those infertility treatments and you get all the multiples. And so we took the multiples out and we looked just at our singleton preterm births. And our singleton preterm birth rate is the one that's rising significantly. We've had a slight increase in our multiples, but not very much. So we looked at mode of delivery. Everybody knows there's more C-sections these days, and Kentucky's trend, this is 10 years ago where we were with C-sections, and we've steadily climbed like the rest of the country has. So we didn't know if there was a difference in those babies who are getting C-sectioned, and maybe that was part of it. We tried to look at some of the risk factors that would cause a C-section. This is PIH, which we looked at to see if there was like an epidemic of PIH that made us have all these C-sections, and it's not any different than it was 10 years ago. We looked at diabetes, and as you might expect, there's a little bit more incidence of diabetes in those babies that are born closer to term. But overall, the incidence of diabetes is not significantly high in Kentucky compared to other states. And when we map it out by area development district, we find that the incidence of diabetes bears no correlation whatsoever to the prematurity rates. So we don't think that that's really a significant factor in our rising preterm birth rate. So I'm a neonatologist, so we broke this up by gestational age. And we looked first at a vaginal births, again, because we don't know if there's a difference between our vaginal and our C-section births, and we broke it down by gestational age. And you can see here very clearly what happened. The very low birth weight babies and the very preterm babies, less than 32 weeks, the green is 32, so everything below that has really changed very little since the early 90s. But look what happens here with the 33 to 34 weekers. They're going up, and really a steep rise now in the 35 and 36 weekers. So this is vaginal births, so we looked at C-section births, and we found exactly the same thing. Again, the very low birth weight babies, the small babies, the micro preemies, have not changed much in the last decade. But if you look at the 34 weekers, 33, 34 weekers, and 35, 36 weekers, so it doesn't matter whether it's vaginal or C-section, our problem is clearly with these bigger babies. And in fact, if you look at our pie chart of all of our preterm births in Kentucky, you can see that fully 60% of them are 35 and 36 weeks. Another 19% are 33 to 34 weeks. So our late preterm, which is defined now as 34 and 0/7 to 36 and 6/7, is almost 80% in Kentucky. And it's about 70% nationally. So the late preterm is certainly the most significant factor in our rising prematurity rates. And this is the chart. If we took these numbers off the top, you would think it was the first chart you saw with our preterm birth rates. You can see the national rate has increased slowly, and Kentucky's rate has increased faster. And right now in Kentucky, one in every 10 babies born is late preterm. But you can see the national trend has also mirrored that, and that's where the biggest part of the rising prematurity rate is from the late preterm. So why is the late preterm important? It's the major cause of our rising prematurity rates, both in Kentucky and nationally. These are the definitions that were decided on at an NICHD conference in the summer of 2005. So late preterm is the first day of the 34th week, so 34 and 0/7, to the last day of the 36th week, 36 and 6/7. So that's the definition now that everybody has agreed to use. And this is where all the information on the late preterm has been published. You know, we used to focus, again, on the micro preemies, and all the outcome data and stuff were focused on the small preemies. So only recently has this been in the literature, just in the last year. This is Seminars in Perinatology, which is the results of that NICHD conference, and that was published in February and March of last year. There was a summary article in Pediatrics, and the whole clinics in perinatology in December of last year was dedicated to the late preterm. So this information is new in the literature, so a lot of physicians even don't know about it yet. But I'm just going to give you a real quick summary of some of the problems of a late preterm infant. Now, we know that they have immediate problems with temperature instability and hypoglycemia. Respiratory distress is really significant, and it's one of the reasons that ACOG actually recommends no elective C-section before 39 weeks, unless you've determined fetal lung maturity, because these kids, when they get respiratory distress, they get really, really sick, and these are the kids that end up on ECMO in high frequency. And you can see here, week by week, it makes a difference. If they're at 37 weeks, they're twice as likely to need a ventilator. If they're at 36 weeks, 5 times, 35 weeks, 9 times, and at 34 weeks, they're 20 times more likely than a term baby to need a ventilator. And in fact, most of the ventilator babies in NICUs all across the country are late preterm babies. In fact, most of the admissions to NICUs all across the country, the largest volume is late preterm babies, not the micro preemies. They're important, but they're a very small number. So most of our NICU care is really targeted at late preterm infants. We're going to skip some of the details on the respiratory morbidity, but hypoglycemia is a very common problem that we see both in term and preterm. The problem is, in late preterms, they haven't developed the compensatory mechanisms that term babies have to adjust for hypoglycemia, and so they're more likely to have neurologic problems as a result of hypoglycemia. The thing that we've learned about hypoglycemia in recent years is that even clinically insignificant drops in glucose in the newborn period can cause long-term developmental outcomes. And so these kids in late preterm are much more at risk than a term baby who comes out and has his blood sugar drop temporarily and come back up. So it's all about the brain. And this is the other just fascinating information that came out from the NICHD conference. The brain develops sequentially from the hindbrain to the forebrain. The lower functions mature first, but the brain at 35 weeks weighs only two-thirds what it will weigh at term. So these babies that come out at 35 weeks have a whole bunch of brain development yet to do. And let me just show you some details. These babies that come out and have poor feeding at 35 weeks, they have problems with their temperature, it's because their brain stem is immature. And if their brain stem is immature, the higher functions are immature as well. So these babies that come out and have more problems, which the late preterms do, are telling us that their brain is not mature yet. If we go on up a little bit to the cerebellum at 34 weeks is only 55% what it will be at term. And these are the functions of the cerebellum. And for those of you who know any preschool teachers, you'll know they can pick out the preemies in their room by this function, by those functions. The white matter, which is the supporting structures in the brain, increase fivefold from 35 weeks to 41 weeks. The cerebral cortex, the part we think with, at 34 weeks is only 53% of the volume it will be at full term. So there is a huge amount of brain development that goes on in those last 4 to 6 weeks, where now we're delivering one out of every 10 babies. So from a public health standpoint, we're certainly concerned. These babies are twice as likely to die of SIDS. They have an 80% increased risk of ADHD. And look at this, 20% have clinically significant behavior problems at 8 years of age. Now, 8 years of age is important because that's beyond the period where they're remodeling, where their brain is remodeling. So one in five of these babies are going to have problems down the road. And that, of course, translates into costs for everybody. Let's just go into not just the hospitalization costs. These are Kentucky data. But early intervention for late preterm babies, there's a much bigger drain on the system for late preterm babies than there is for full-term babies or even for the micropreemies. You can see here very preterm births only had 8% of the cost. This is from Massachusetts. Late preterm infants compromised 8% of the infants served, but 16% of the costs. There are kindergarten costs, and as you know, premature babies are more likely to have chronic diseases also as they grow older. This is coronary artery disease. They're 1.5 times more likely to have heart disease and 18 times more likely to have diabetes as they grow older. So it's certainly a public health problem. These are some of the things that we're using to address it. ACOG guidelines say that you shouldn't have an elective induction or C-section before 39 weeks, and people are just not following that. There was an article in Economics, which is a business magazine, that said the most common day of the most births used to be in September, and now it's the last week of December. So guess why? Tax deductions. So we know that elective C-sections and inductions are happening in large volumes out there. So we need to educate the public. We need to educate providers on this new information about brain development. We need to educate the public. Avoid these deliveries for convenience. Smoking cessation is big. HANDS is our home visiting program that's evidence-based, where we can cut prematurity rates by half if they get 16 or more visits, and we cut them to a third of a comparison group if they have if they get in the first trimester. Centering pregnancy, you all have probably seen that model, but certainly the outcomes are better there. Healthy start models, our healthy start model is in Louisville and has much better infant mortality and birth outcomes. And then we also have healthy babies are worth the wait, which is our project with National March of Dimes and Johnson & Johnson Pediatric Institute, where we're picking three intervention communities and three comparison communities, and we're bringing all this information to those communities and involving everybody in the community to see if we can throw the kitchen sink at them and make a difference. So in summary, our rates are our preterm birth are rising twice as fast as the national rate. It's largely due to late preterms, and that's not only true in Kentucky but in the nation. Late preterms have significant increases in morbidity as well as mortality compared to term infants. So providers, patients, and the public need to be aware of the risks of late preterm delivery and the ways to prevent it. There is preventable preterm birth in some cases. You know, when we started these discussions, people said, well, you can't prevent prematurity. But we know now that you can. We have enough programs that have shown enough outcomes that there is a significant amount of prematurity that can be prevented, and that's what we need to work on. Thank you.